Before we get to the episode, I want to specifically thank our patron supporters. Without you, we could not do this show. If you get any value out of this podcast, please consider returning that value to us via becoming a patron or donating via PayPal. Patron members get special bonus content, early releases, and ad-free episodes. So check it out, dudesanddadspodcast.com/support. Now on to the episode. Joel.
Andrew.
It's cold out today.
Boy, oh boy, isn't it? But you know what is not cold?
Your heart.
Thank you. Good job. Well done. Warm hearts.
For
open
everybody.
Open minds. Warm voices. All that. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dudes and Dads podcast. Yeah. Glad to have each and every one of you along for the ride. What a special. We have a lot of firsts.
Ride. Yeah, we do.
We have a lot of firsts on this show.
Tell me.
Oh, yeah?
Well, yeah. Okay, so first of all, Andy, you and I have dreamt for a time to have sort of a third man in the booth, so to speak.
A Jamie, if you will.
A Jamie, if you will, to quote Joe Rogan. A person who, when we have a random idea and we need someone to fact check us, to look into if what we're saying is even remotely accurate, like on the fly.
Because we want our audience to have
a confidence.
Legit, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
A confidence yes. That we're saying real things.
Right.
Mark Graff, our new production assistant. Mark is
And previous guest.
Guest, long-time listener, first-time guest. No, one-time guest, long-time listener. And
first-time producer.
Yeah. So we're glad to have him along, and you'll be hearing more from him. But we reached a level, Andy, where it was like, this show is nearly off the rails as it is. And with a third person, we hope to bring a little
more off the rails.
A little off the rails. It's also funny because Mark did work for the railroad, and that was an interesting.
That's true.
That was an interesting image that I gave.
That was one of the topics that we talked about while he was
perfect.
Here.
Okay. So, yes, Mark, or Marky Mark, as I shall call him from now on. We're glad to have you, buddy. Cool. Well, hey, everybody, as you know, we are supported by so many people. And we have so many people to thank, especially this is the season of thankfulness, I think, Andy. People that have support us that, they see us on the streets and they say, love the show. Keep it up. Keep doing what you're doing. Which warms our hearts in this cold weather. But then we also have beyond just that sort of support. We have a special kind of support. And that means that comes from our official supporters.
Right. So Dudes and Dads is supported by Everence Financial, helping individuals, organizations and congregations with financial services built on a foundation of faith. Meet the local team at everence.com/Michiana. I always miss that one.
Michiana. Yeah.
Securities offered through Concourse Financial Group, Securities Incorporated, FINRA, SIPC. No, they're not anymore.
No.
No. Cetera.
Cetera. We'll have to change the copy.
Change the copy. Yeah.
That's an official comment. Hey, Andy, I also want to say we had an experience today. We got to see our daughters in the church Christmas musical.
We did, yes.
And it was dynamite. Not a dry eye in the house. Mostly because I laughed real hard, but
that was the funny thing too. Like, so before you all got in there,
yes.
Cause I was doing audio producing for it. The directors were like, okay, there is going to be some stuff in here that you guys are saying that it's funny to the adults.
Yes.
So you need to wait and let that laugh.
You need
to let them laugh.
Give the pause for the punchline. It was great. It was really,
and
really
it turned
good.
Out good.
Yeah. A big shout out to Pastor Amanda here at Clinton Frame and all of the team that put that together. They've been rehearsing with these elementary kids for a few months now, and it really showed all the time and attention. Everyone had a good time, so it was really, really cool. So Andy, we have a really special guest on this evening, and I'm really, really grateful to have him on. I should say, for our local community, there are few people who do not know who Vince Turner is. He has operated in many circles. He is just somebody that I from a distance have really admired the work that he has done. And it came a point, Vince is in, there's a new chapter of life that Vince is entering, which means Vince is moving out of the area, and I said, doggone it, before he does.
We need to get you in.
We need to get him.
We like our remote guests.
Yes.
We like in-person guests even better.
Even better in person. So.
Because they're in person.
Yeah, yeah. So, Vince, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
So glad to have you here.
So, Mark, roll credits, because the introduction took so dang long. The show's done now. Yeah, so,
yeah.
Appreciate that. Oh, by the way, Mark, I when we first were introduced to each other, I didn't really think you were that homely.
Yeah.
But to go from being a guest in front of the camera to, okay, now you're in charge of being way back there, you know, so it's,
we are going
to
eventually give him a microphone and we will put a camera on. Yeah, we promise we'll put a camera on him,
but we love you anyway, Mark.
We do. We're grateful. Really do. Grateful for the support.
Yeah.
So Vince, the one, I think the thing for me is, when I think about, your career, something that, and no matter what that you were doing, and this mm-hmm. is kind of part we want to talk about, the way that you have you and, as we'll talk about your lovely bride, which we can't not talk about Pat, the way that you guys have really, I think, impacted this community, the mark that you have made, here is really, really substantial. And, I've been talking about Vince to other community leaders here this past couple of weeks. And it's like, everybody has just like these really beautiful, so many stories, and Vince has enough stories of his own. I mean, we could go on and on. But Vince, you started off, and I think this is interesting because in terms of a context of our audience, mm-hmm. People, you know, families that are raising kiddos, that are thinking about, for many of them, thinking about career paths, thinking about just all the, like, helping understand what, how you take a certain talent, a certain love, and turn that into like a job or a direction in life, mm-hmm. or something like that. And you started off in this wonderful thing, early on in life, that seems like it's not quite the thing that it used to be, but in terms of journalism, in terms mm-hmm. of, and all of that. So, we want to dive in and we want to kind of go through your career path a little bit, lessons learned. But before we do, we always have to ask the dad stats, because we got to get to know you.
So dad stats are essentially just, who are you? Family, wife, kids,
all the things you want to put out on the internet.
Right.
Yeah. There we go. Well, I'm your guest tonight.
Yes.
And I'm grateful for that. I am a proud follower of Jesus Christ. Mm. I'm a Rich Mullins devotee.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
And there is a quote in the Rich Mullins biography, An Arrow Pointing Skyward, that just absolutely encapsulates my faith life or my faith walk. And he said he's madly in love with Jesus, but he doesn't always love Jesus in the way that makes other people around him comfortable. And that's probably the best way to describe me as well. You know, I'm a little bit of a spiritual mutt. I was born and raised Catholic by a Sicilian grandmother. I was the oldest male in my generation. So guess what I was supposed to be, guys?
Yeah,
that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know. You know, even when I have the opportunity to fill the pulpit now, I'll look up and go, Grandma, this is as close as it gets, you know?
Yeah.
And because I've got four children, well, you know, the celibacy thing didn't work very well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I'm married to Pat, and we'll get into this a little later in the program because you wanted to talk about my influences. But my life is very definitely divided into BP and AP, who I was before Pat came into my life. Mm. And who I am, or who I hope I am after Pat came into my life. And it's, for me, it's just this great story of how God, you know, takes broken pieces and makes jars that will hold water. We have, our blended family has four children. Our daughter Angela lives in Rockford, Illinois, silly girl, but we have three grandchildren there. My daughter Andrea lives in Fairhope, Alabama, which is where we are moving. Pat is already there, and then I'm moving at the end of the week. And she and Heath have two grandchildren down there. I'm going to get to watch Braxton play for Fairhope High School.
Yeah.
And that may sound familiar to a couple of people around here, because Fairhope is the alma mater of a kid named Riley Leonard.
Oh, okay.
Who they saw on Colts today and played at the University of Notre Dame. Our son Benjamin is the director of transportation and logistics for the city of Fort Lauderdale. So we'll be a little closer to them as well. Mm-hmm. And we have two grandchildren there. And then our wee little one, Melissa, lives in the Marion Wabash area, married into a farm family. And we have four grandchildren down there. So if you're keeping score at home, four children, 11 grandchildren. I always tell people that I'm the most patient customer in the world with at a restaurant or a store because, you know, especially being a married guy with three adult daughters, I wait for everything. But that's kind of the dad story. And and of everything in there, and I love being Pat's husband, love having the children. But I'll tell you what, grandchildren are kind of God's redemption. Mm. Everything you didn't do right as a parent, you get a do-over for grandchildren. And we just have a great time with that.
I love it. I love it.
That's awesome.
So Vince, we're going to jump in the time machine and go back and ask the question. When you were young, what did you want to be when you grow up?
I wanted to be a lawyer.
Okay.
Oh. You know, after we got over, you know, disappointing grandma.
and not being a priest.
Moving into the next realm. When I was in school, I really wanted to be a lawyer. But I had to work my way. I went to 1 year of college. In a long story that we don't have to go over, but I became a foster kid.
Okay.
And back then we had what they called the parents' confidential statements. There was pre-FAFSA, and I didn't have any parents to do parents' confidential statements. So if I was going to get through school, I was going to have to work my way through school. And I did a lot of speech and debate when I was in high school, and kind of had a natural gravity for being behind a microphone. Or, you know, that's another kind of another thing about how God takes those broken pieces. When I first went to high school, the choir director in high school, Sheldon Bixler, was determined that I was going to be the best bass or baritone he ever had in the choir, because my voice was already, you know, kind of shaping then. 6 weeks after that, I was the permanent narrator for all musical activities because I can't sing. I love music, but I cannot sing. So that set the stage a little bit. A job I got to try and, you know, work my way through school was working weekends at the radio station. Mm-hmm. And turned out that the bug bit. And so I switched my attentions to looking at broadcasting and ended up doing a couple of gigs in the Fort Wayne area. But I wanted to do sports. And in one of the few predictions that I've ever gotten correct, I told the folks in Fort Wayne, I said, listen, Bob Chase is going to be here forever. Bob Chase ended up doing Fort Wayne Comets hockey for 54 years.
My goodness,
Just an amazing career and a terrific guy. So with the help of some folks and the Federated Media up here in Elkhart, I ended up coming up here, did a little bit of time doing a sports column for the Elkhart Truth, with the promise that when the opportunity came to move into the play-by-play and broadcasting, that I would slide over to WTRC. And that's what happened. And I ended up spending about 4 years at the newspaper here in Elkhart, and then 13 years at WTRC before it was time to do the career switch again.
Yeah. When you're thinking about broadcasting, what did you love the most about that work?
There's two things that have carried me through all of my career opportunities. One is that I love people. I mean, I just love being around people. It's one of the things, you know, I explained that I was a spiritual mutt. I was raised in the Catholic tradition. My final foster father was a Methodist pastor. My favorite Bible teacher is a Baptist, David Jeremiah. I am intrigued and inspired by the Mennonite tradition that I found when I came here to Elkhart County, and that rare combination of being able to serve Jesus Christ and also serve fellow man. Mm-hmm. So that has kind of got me going as well. But the thread that runs through all of that is that I just genuinely love people, and I really want to hear their stories, and which made me doing interviews and features and those kind of things special, because I want to hear their stories. Mm-hmm. So you take that natural curiosity that I have, and then you marry it to, you know, this wonderful work opportunity that comes either through broadcasting or later when I went to the children's home or banking or whatever. That's really kind of, I love asking questions, and it's part of what makes it intriguing here, because I'm on the other end of that.
Well,
I'm
that,
answering.
Gotcha. As I say, and I think that's really why we started this show is we just know a lot of people who have interesting stories and we love hearing the stories. And so in connecting people,
do you, Vince, do you feel like, the curiosity thing, we talk a lot about a spirit of curiosity on this show. Is that something that can come naturally to you, or can you, or can you foster curiosity? Can you build curiosity?
I think most of it comes naturally, or at least the seeds are planted naturally by God. But I think you can learn to cultivate it. And I think there are good ways and poor ways of learning. And that's where the BP and AP comes in, is I really, after being with Pat, learned how to appropriately, you know, make those curiosities come to pass. But, you know, one thing about when I explain about my broadcast career, the thing that probably is the easiest way to explain it to people who look at the career as a whole, as I shrink it down to 1988. That's a long time ago. I can't, but in 1988,
I was four.
Thank you. And Mark was like still a Cheeto in his dad's eyes.
Two years old, Mark. Okay.
But in 1988, Rick Meyer was playing football at Goshen High School. Yep. Sean Kemp was playing basketball at Concord. Fellow by the name of David Rivers, who was one of my all time favorite athletes, was a basketball player at the University of Notre Dame. And I was doing play by play at Notre Dame. And Notre Dame won the national championship, which, by the way, is the last year they won the national championship in college football. And I got to do all of that.
Yeah, I
got to be a part of all of that. And they paid me to do it. Silly people. So that kind of explains why broadcasting was so special to me. But, you know, then time moved on and we made changes.
Is how much of it for you was, hey, I had this skill and I just built that skill and I've invested in it. And how much of it is right place, right time?
Well, there's probably skill is third.
Okay.
Right place, right time, certainly is a big part of it. And the other part is mentors. I mean, I had in all of my endeavors, I had terrific mentors. And in broadcasting, there was a gentleman, and he's the guy was responsible for pushing me toward Elkhart, a gentleman by the name of Hilliard Gates. People who aren't familiar with Hilliard will recognize him as the play-by-play voice of the radio guy in the movie Hoosiers.
Okay.
But he was iconic in Fort Wayne as an IU basketball broadcaster in high school. So Hilliard Gates was a really, really big part of that. And a fellow by the name of Jack Maurer, who gave me my first news job when I was just 20 years old in Fort Wayne. Funny story about Jack, and it's, you know, this is what happens when we age. Jack and I were talking just about a year or so ago, and we were, you know, talking about my travels and the different things. And so he goes, well, who hired you here? And I went, Jack, you did. And he goes, oh, well, that was a long time ago and you didn't stay very long. So, I had great mentors. And then coming to Elkhart County, what really made it, because of my natural curiosity, just had some terrific coaches that I was able to work with. Tom Kurth was probably the best social worker and coach when he was football coach at Elkhart Central that you could possibly find. Jimmy Hahn at Concord opened tremendous, tremendous doors for me to be able to move forward. And then the sports information director at the University of Notre Dame at the time, Roger Valdeciri, just gave me terrific opportunities. So, and then the third was whatever skills or natural abilities. So first was right place, right time. You were very perceptive about that. Then mentors, and then whatever skills I may or may not have.
And when you think about like even skill development as a broadcaster, I mean, sometimes when I listen to play by play guys, it feels like there's a few things. Number one, and I'm going to blank on his name, the radio play by play for the Detroit Lions guy. Well, they'll show videos of him up in the booth, and he has a team around him,
right?
That are pointing to things, that are listing things. Like there is a whole
That was always the frustrating thing about doing high school football, right? You're doing like on your own with your color guy, and you're looking at your charts and everything else. And so the higher you go, the easier it is.
That's right.
You can't mess it up because you've got three other people pointing.
Right. And I think that's what I've appreciated about folks that are at the high school level that are doing it so well, because you know that's the, I mean, they're getting a workout in there. how, like, developing that skill, it, like, I just, in my mind, there's so much going on. I mean, I did PA announcing at the college that I was at when I first started.
Okay.
And that alone was watching for the score, getting the number, mm-hmm. looking, saying the right name, mm-hmm. getting to know the team well enough so that I, like, just kind of had a sense of what was going on. Mm-hmm. And that is going on the entire time. It's more than just a good voice, obviously.
Oh, well, yeah. It's so much more than that. And PA announcing, I would argue that PA announcing is sometimes tougher than play-by-play because PA announcing, everybody hears exactly what's going on while they're watching it.
Yeah, right.
Doing radio, that didn't always happen, although I still maintain that the best compliment I ever had as a play-by-play guy was when people would bring their radios to Northside Gym.
Oh, yes.
Then you know that want to hear what you have to say. Yep. And then I had a number of really good color men who worked with me. The best was Dave Kowalski, Killer Kowalski, who played high school basketball at South Bend, Washington, and then played at Georgia Tech and Ohio University. And he just had so much fun, loved the game so much that it made the broadcast terrific.
That's good. Well, again, some of the best individuals are people who've got teams, you know, obviously good there teams with them. That's
And I think,
which is why we love Mark.
Right.
Mark. All right. We love Mark. Yeah. There we go. Yes. So, I mean, you had this kind of extensive all over the place in terms of the broadcast experience. Mm-hmm. And then you made a move.
Right.
Which, I think from the outside, I go, Vince, how in the heck what you had built in broadcast, mm-hmm. the relationships that you had built there, do you take this next step? So tell us what you did next.
Okay.
How you got there. Cause when I kind of reading through Vince's bio, that's interesting.
Well, I ended up going to Basher Children's Home.
Yeah. Okay.
And became the director of development, and it was a call.
Yeah. Mm.
And it was a call that was precipitated by a valley. About shortly after Pat and I were married, it happened in 1997, and Pat and I were married in 1992. So about 4.5, 5 years after Pat and I were married, we were vacationing in Gulf Shores. Oddly enough, very close to where we're going to live now. But we were vacationing in Gulf Shores, and my wife was stricken with a syndrome called Guillain-Barré.
Oh, yeah.
She was paralyzed from the neck down it started with tingling in her hands and her feet, and we ended up being in a hospital in Pensacola, Florida for about 9 weeks.
Wow.
And we slowly began to recover. I lived in the Best Western Motel on North Davis Highway across from the hospital and spent every day with the hospital. My broadcast people were tremendous to me. I ended up, doing my morning sports shows. This happened in the late spring, early summer. I ended up doing my morning sports shows from my hotel room before I went over to the hospital room. And then the community support was just fabulous. We still run into 20 some years later. We still run into people who say, "Hey, we prayed for you."
Yeah. Wow.
We had people who just stormed the Bastille in order to support us. And one of my favorite story is, when I was doing Jimtown High School football playoffs, and they were really good back then, so they made the playoffs almost every year. But when we did a home football game, my favorite dessert is apple crisp. And the Jimtown High School cafeteria made homemade apple crisp that I loved it. So when we did home football games, home playoff games, the ladies in the cafeteria made a vat of apple crisp and put it in the press box for me.
Oh, man.
And it was up to me whether I shared or not.
Yeah.
I won't confess whether or not I actually did, but it depends on whether Bob Nagel was there. When Bob was there, I had no choice but to share. He's bigger than I am. So when we are probably 3 weeks into our stay down in Pensacola, a FedEx box arrives with a return address, Jimtown High School cafeteria. Ooh, oh, and I'm going, "Oh, whoa, here we go." And so I open it up. It's Rice Krispie Squares. But there's a note to explain that FedEx wouldn't ship the apple crisp, so with the Rice Krispie Squares. But that was kind of an indication of what Pat and I experienced so far away. The hands of prayer that lifted us up, the support that we had. And what happened, Joel, is when I went back to broadcasting, it felt a little empty.
Okay. Mm.
It just felt like, you know, God, you did so much for me.
Mm.
If you want me to stay, I'll stay. But if you've got something else, okay.
Yeah.
And it was, I had just begun then to start doing some of my community service. I was serving on the board at Basher. We were looking for a development director. And the chairman of the board at that time, Earl Poorbaugh, we're in the middle of a discussion. He goes, you know, I know who would be perfect for this job. And like a guppy, I went, who? And he just pointed his finger and went, you.
Yeah.
And it just sounded right.
Mm.
And I'll tell you what, that was such a great thing because I was able to do ministry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's when I started preaching because I ended up getting my local pastor's license to speak in different churches that were supportive of Basher. We were able to do some really great things, refurbish the cottage. We built a new school and community center. I just felt like it was time for me to do something else, that I was, I was called to do something else. And that experience at the children's home answered that call. I was able to see how God can really make a difference. And Clinton Frame was one of those churches that came alongside and supported the children's home and in, you know, all over the county. It was able, I was able to take my brand, if you will, or my name recognition, and I carried it to Basher. And a year after I went to Basher, a fellow by the name of Don Phillips came from New York to be the CEO. And he and I just, we had this wonderful time, about a 10-year run of just tremendous, tremendous things that we could see God do on campus. And it was just a thrill.
That's amazing.
But that's how I made the transformation.
Yeah. Something completely unexpected to you.
Oh, yeah. I never would have said, oh, yeah, that's what I want to do next. You know, and there's this, you know, kind of trite saying that, you know, that God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. And I was totally unqualified to go do fundraising and development at a nonprofit agency, especially the one the size at Basher. But when I went, there were people who came alongside me. And of course, they sent me to school and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I ended up, you know, being a tool that God could use to help make a difference at the children's home.
Yeah, I got a text from Sean McCrindle, current CEO over at Basher today. Vince, these are in Sean's own words, and you can even tell me more. You can tell me more of the story. He says, you know, this is what he says. He goes, Vince is one of those foundational guys for our community. He has been such a big part of making things better wherever he goes. His heart for people and leadership inspire me and many others. My favorite quote he told one of our kids was, look at your belly button. It's not the center of the universe. And then he encouraged him to go and serve with joy. I am tucking that one away.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's one of a couple that I kind of coined when I was at the children's home. When I left the children's home for, you know, the third of my three major careers, they gave me a plaque and it was the top 10 Vince sayings. And it's one of those that still hangs around either in my office or at home or wherever it happens to be. But because of those things that,
yeah.
You know, that,
So I caught that you said three major career changes.
Okay.
What's next for you after that? Okay.
And so then from the children's home, I met with a couple of guys from Muncie, Dave Heater and Pat Botts from Mutual Bank at that time. And they came up and I assumed they were coming up to talk about the building project because Basher's footprints extends all the way down to the Indianapolis area and Mutual Bank was birthed in Muncie. And we were about 5 or 6 minutes into the conversation and I found out my assumptions were all wrong because David looked at me and said, have you ever thought about banking? And I went, no. And 6 weeks later, I was signing a letter of intent. And ended up becoming first a business development officer and then the regional manager for Mutual Bank, which since got bought out after about, I was there about 12, 13 years. But that was another one of those things where, you know, you just kind of wrestle. I understand what Jacob felt like now and, you know, and I'm thankful that my hip doesn't hurt, but tell a story on myself. I've got a good friend. His name is Rob Neal. He's a pastor was in Upland at that time. And I called him because I was trying to, I felt called to Basher, but I was intrigued with the opportunity. And I really felt like, okay, it's time to move on. Plus it looked like it was an opportunity for me to move toward the kids who live in Fairhope that were going to go be mm-hmm. by now lived in Indianapolis at the time. Mm-hmm. And we really thought Indianapolis would be a great place to live. So I was kind of looking for a career path that would take me down there. So, we were looking at that, but I really hesitated because I had felt called by God to be at Basher. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to deny the call. You know, the guy, yeah. the last guy that said no to God lived in a fish for a while.
And right.
I didn't think that'd be a great place to take up residence. And so, but the banking opportunity was one of three different opportunities that I had unsolicited when I was mm-hmm. starting to think, you know, it might be time to do something yeah. else. So I called Rob and Rob starts laughing at me and I was angry. Mm-hmm. I was like, Rob, I'm pouring out my heart.
I'm calling for help here, man.
Yeah, what is your problem? He goes, he said, Vince, you are the subject of every student pastor who's ever used the guy on the roof story. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I said, what? He goes, yeah. He says, you know that old story that the floods are coming. The guy crawls on the roof. A rowboat comes by and says, hey, you know, come down. We'll take you. And he says, no, God's going to save me. And then a helicopter flies in and says, hey, dangle the rope. And the guy says, no, God's going to save me. And well, and then sooner or later, the flood waters rise up and the guy drowns and he's standing in front of God soaking wet and said, God, I relied on you to save me. And God said, I don't know what your problem was. I sent you a boat and I sent you a helicopter. Yeah, yeah. So then it dawned on me. He said, Vince, you're released.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
these God wouldn't have sent you these opportunities if you weren't released. Mm-hmm. So I had an opportunity to go to Mutual Bank and had a great run there. And then in 2020, there was a merger. Northwest bought out Mutual. And my bride at that time asked me to take a year off.
Okay.
My big concern, you know, I knew they weren't going to keep the executive team when the merger happened. And my bride asked me to take a year off because that's also when COVID came. And yeah. so mm-hmm. I was probably under a little more stress than I realized, but certainly Pat knew it. Mm-hmm. So I did.
As they do.
I made it about 9 months. And then Nick Kiefer at the mm-hmm. Goshen Chamber of Commerce called me and we started talking and they wanted to start a podcast program, The Sound of Goshen.
Yeah.
And they thought, hey, you know, we'll get an old radio guy who's not doing anything. Now, what I really believe happened is that after me being at 9 months at home and Pat looking at the prospect of three more months of me being at home before you know, this year off took place, I think she wrote Nick a check and said, look, take him 2 days a week for as long as this money holds out. Yeah. So, yeah. you know, I came semi out of retirement to work as the communications specialist at the Chamber of Commerce, mm. doing the podcast and teaching the leadership class and that kind of thing. And I've just had a tremendous, tremendous opportunity. And the fulfillment that I've had over the last 4.5 years has really been terrific. Nick's been a great guy to work with. And you know, so. When you put all three of those things together, when you take my journalism career, newspaper, radio, and then you take the children's home, and then you take the bank, and my great loves were satisfied in all three of those. Mm. All of them were ripe for natural curiosity. All of them mm. gave you great opportunities to intersect with people. And all of them met that need I have inside to have a challenge. Mm-hmm. And banking especially, because you know, when we sat down, when I did the business development thing for about 2 years, and then Chuck Viator was the Northern Region president at the time, and he called me, and you'll appreciate this, anybody who's ever gone through, like, you know, evaluations or whatever the case may be, but Chuck gives me a call and said, hey, are you in Warsaw or Elkhart this Friday? Because I had both Kosciuszko and Elkhart County. I said, oh, I'm in Warsaw. He says, well, you know, let's pick a restaurant and let's meet Friday morning. And I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
You know, because this is like right in the cusp of the financial crisis mm-hmm. and everything else. And eh, we're meeting in a public place and it's on Friday morning and yeah. So I even told Pat, I said, hey, you know, I might not come home with a job.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you know, you need to be ready for this. So, you know, Chuck outlines these things and then says, we want you to take over as regional manager. You know, Max is retiring and, you know, we want you to take the regional manager's job. And this is how bad my filter is because I looked at him when he asked that and I go, well, I didn't apply for that job. So he starts laughing and says, okay, you know, we understand, but you know, we've watched you work and we think you'd be good at this and we think you'd enjoy it and so on. So we go through all of these things and finally agree. And then Chuck says, oh, by the way, you need to go back to school.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so. Mm. So at age 54, I became the oldest person in the graduate banking program at the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But had a great time. Had a great time. By the way, the one thing that happened the first summer I went to Wisconsin, when I was in Madison, I wanted to drive to Bloomington and apologize to all those people for thinking they were liberal. Because Madison, Wisconsin is a different planet.
You know, and that's the thing. You think, yes. Well, and I think all of us as Midwesterners, we forget that, like, there are these cities that are, that can be seemingly so different from the surrounding area, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, I've experienced that.
Bloomington is the blueberry in the strawberry pie. So, you know,
that's funny. So, you know, Vince, I think
you didn't think I'd ramble this much.
I love all of this.
It's great. It's great.
This is going in the vault. When people are like, if you're like, hey, tell me more about Vince. I'm like, here's the episode ready made.
There you go.
You know, when you came to the chamber and you mentioned this, like the thing that I, and my wife has said this, and I have seen more from a distance, but I've really, really appreciated it, is your investment in young leaders specifically. Mm-hmm. And it just seems to me like I see that as being a real source of joy to you. What is it? What's been your perspective and your approach and your goals in terms of working with young leaders and the kind of in our business, you know, from that chamber side, mm-hmm. but in kind of business, the business world, when you're because you've done these kind of cohorts, essentially, right. kind of these leadership right. cohorts. Mm-hmm. What's been the dream for that? What really kind of inspired you to make that kind of investment?
Well, Nick Kiefer gets the credit for, you know, creating the concept and trying to work hard to make things happen. And then, but the great thing about it from my perspective was he gave me this outline of what he wanted to see happen. And then he said, you just color in mm-hmm. whatever fits mm-hmm. your personality with how you fit the needs and everything else. You know, my favorite biblical character is John Mark. And then kind of by assimilation, Barnabas. Mm. Barnabas was the encourager. Mm. And, you know, Mark is my favorite gospel because Mark is filled with these stories where people had an encounter with Jesus Christ. But that encounter was the fodder for that encounter was something they did. It was initiative that they took. Whether it's the woman who reached out and touched the hem of his garment, or whether it was Jairus who sought out Christ and said, you know, hey, my daughter, or the four men who lowered, I love the story of the faith of the four. They lowered the paralytic before Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, think about the building committee when the roof got a hole torn in it and they didn't care. But that impetus then, you know, because Marcus is such a wonderful book for me, I started trying to learn a little bit more about John Mark. And one of the things about John Mark was he had somebody who built into him, and that was Barnabas, to the point where Barnabas and Paul even strained their relationship over John Mark. Mm. You know, John Mark, scripture's not really clear on it, but he messed up somewhere. Mm-hmm. And Paul, when they got ready to take another journey, Paul's like, nah, I'm not taking that guy. Yeah, he's a little bit like the Mark back there. And sorry, it was just too easy. And Barnabas said, no, we're you know, he deserves to be with us. And Paul was adamant. And so Paul and Silas went one way and Barnabas and John Mark went the other. But it's really interesting because there's a piece in Timothy, just one of these little tiny, and I love these little nuggets that are in scripture that you can read past 20 times. And then, but the 21st time it's like, whoa. Mm-hmm. So in Paul's letter from prison to Timothy, and he talks about being pretty much alone and, you know, so bring this person, bring that person. And he said, bring John Mark because he is useful to me. Mm-hmm. So because of the effort that Barnabas put into John Mark, even Paul came around. So that's my goal. When you talk about being able to build into young people, my goal is to be Barnabas. Mm-hmm. I want to help people understand, young people especially, understand the special gifts that God has put in them and then give them every opportunity they have to succeed.
That's amazing.
And when that happens, that's when I take great pride.
Yeah. Yeah. what for you has been sort of the approach in sort of uncovering those things? I know that, you know, so many young professionals today, mm-hmm. I mean, Andy and I talk about, and we have a whole conversation around kind of the emerging generation and concerns mm-hmm. that we have in terms of them entering the marketplace and, you know, skill set development mm-hmm. and kind of awarenesses and kind of the EQ development and all of that. Mm-hmm. What has been, when you're thinking about like specifically how you've gone about making those investments, is there skill sets that we need to be talking about with young professionals? Are there awarenesses? Like, what has kind of risen to the top for you and your concern?
Well, the first thing I had to do is make sure I was tuned in. Mm. You know, you can't be a coach if you don't know how well you coach and what it's like to be a player and so on. So the thing I had to do was learn to listen. Mm-hmm. And as you guys have found out in the last 35 minutes or whatever, that's not one of my best skills. But so I had to learn to listen and be able to absorb that. But so then what I did there is I went back to my roots. You know, I told you I'm a naturally curious person. So I got naturally curious about each person that was in the cohort or mm-hmm. in the Leadership Academy. I wanted to hear their story. I wanted to, you know, tell me where you're at.
Yeah.
You know, help me understand. And as far as skill sets, I think the biggest thing, I think there's two things. One is, and I go back to my sports days this way, and, you know, we get so hung up on having to succeed every single time. Mm-hmm. But do you realize that we put people in baseball's Hall of Fame who fail 70% of the time?
That's right.
I mean, 300 hitters are considered the gold standard.
That's right.
Mm. What that means is that 70% of the time they didn't get a hit. Yeah. They didn't mm-hmm. do anything, but they made the 30 out of 100 count. Huh. And so if you can get people to see that they don't have to succeed every time, but they do need to learn something. And you watch the great hitters in Major League Baseball. And if a pitcher gets them out with a slider down and in the first time up, guess what happens the second and third time? They lay off the slider down and in because they've learned from that experience. And then when the pitcher goes to a pitch he didn't necessarily want to throw, that's when they stroke it out in the, you know, the gap and drive in two runs with a bases loaded double or whatever the case may be. So getting people to quit putting so much pressure on themselves mm-hmm. is one. But the other thing then is I go back to the John Mark Barnabas experience. Not all of us were meant to be Paul. Not all of us were meant to be the guy in charge. Mm-hmm. But all of us can be Barnabas. Mm-hmm. All of us can be the encourager. All of us can be the cheerleader. All of us, those could be, you know, to come alongside. So my mantra when I was at the bank and when I was managing and when I was working with people, my mantra was that I wanted to do the same thing with everybody in every job description. The first thing I wanted to do was teach. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be able to outline to people. You need to know the basics. You got to understand what it is we expect from you. The other thing is I think we need to coach. You know, once we've taught you the basics, then we need to coach you on how to implement those basics in the way that it best benefits the organization and helps you to grow as well. Unfortunately, I think in today's world, the thing we leave off is what I think is the third and maybe the most important of what I consider that trio, and that's cheerlead. Mm-hmm. I really believe that you need to, and that's what I try to do with the cohorts. I tried to get everybody to believe in themselves by cheering on the things that they talked about and that they were trying to go for. And I think that's, and I take that translation into our faith life. We've got great teachers in our congregations and in our churches and certainly in our pulpits. We've got great teachers who put their hearts and soul into teaching. And we've even got people within the church that are pretty good coaches, you know, whether they're Sunday school leaders or people who serve on the board or whatever. In my opinion, and it's just my opinion, I don't mean this as a criticism, but in my opinion, where congregations really, I don't want to say fail because it's too strong a word, but where they don't maximize what those first two things bring is we're really lousy cheerleaders. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not very good at saying, man, we saw that. We've seen mm-hmm. your progress.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen going to the couple that was struggling and then seeing little things. And again, I'm naturally curious. So I'll be in a church setting sometimes, and I'll know that maybe 6 months ago, that couple was really struggling. Mm-hmm. And man, they were on the precipice. Mm-hmm. And then 6 months later, you see them sitting in a pew or in a chair or whatever, and she's got her head laying on his shoulder, and he's gently stroking her hair. Mm-hmm. I need to say something.
Yeah, right.
And I don't, and not in the way it's
hey,
the
I good couldn't help, yeah, help, yeah. I couldn't help but notice the hey, two of you were
PDA,
pretty cozy.
Little PDA going on there or whatever. Or, wow, you guys were on the rocks and now it looks like you're going to be okay. No, yeah. I just, you know, I'll say something, and sometimes it'll be just maybe to the guy in private, mm-hmm. and I'll just go, man, you know what I loved about today's service? It had nothing to do with the sermon. It had nothing to do with the music. I saw how you were loving on your wife. Mm-hmm. Man, that just inspired me. And I'm going to go home and do the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So if in all of our aspects, and I know that was a long way of answering your question, but one of the things that I really try to do is I try to be a cheerleader.
Yeah.
I want, you know, I hope people feel better after mm-hmm. they've been with me for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I really do. I hope they feel better, but I hope they feel better for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. And that's because the Spirit of God flows through me and my enthusiasm flows out, and they just say, yeah, you know, hey, that was kind of fun being around Vince.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we would be remiss if we didn't have the discussion around your better half and, uh-huh. and this person, because you have identified Pat as this really formational person in your mm-hmm. life, the years before her and then after her. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your relationship. Okay. Tell us about what that has done for you. Cause I get a sense that, you're a different man today than you were because of her.
The work that God has done and the work that God used Pat to do has, I hope, I believe has made a tremendous difference. I just wasn't a really good person for the early part of my career. I just was. And it wasn't that I was this, you know, evil guy or whatever. I was just centered on Vince. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was the president of the Vince Turner fan club. and that self-centeredness, you know, it cost me a marriage. Mm-hmm. It probably hurt, at least in the initial years, hurt my relationship or impeded my relationship with my children. I know there are some people, for every person that you may say, hey, Vince is a great guy, you can find some people that go, oh, Vince, you know. And so, you know, after I went through, you know, the marriage thing, and I'm sitting in the barber chair. I don't know how many people know Doug Schaefer. He used to have Doug Sports Cut.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and Doug's been a friend forever. He's cut my hair ever since I've been in the media. And I'm sitting in the barber chair, and he says, Vince, are you dating anybody? I said, no, and leave me alone. I'm not interested. And if you know Doug at all, you know Doug's not going to let go. And, you know, he kind of kept on, and, you know, said, hey, I know this girl, and, you know, I think she'd be special for you. And so, and I'm like, okay, the only way that I'm going to get my hair cut is if I agree, I'll call. So I said, okay, Doug, I said, I'll tell you what, you talk to her, and if she's interested, I'll call. Well, the story is much better when Pat's here to tell her half of it. But
we may have to get here sometime.
Right, Pat. Because this other half of it is, she just tells it so much better. But Benjamin, our son, she brought Benjamin in and for his haircut. And Doug's kind of hemming and hawing and looking over at Pat while she's cutting on Benjamin's hair. And Pat, are you seeing anybody? And Pat said her first thing was she panicked. Because she's like, Doug, you're married.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. What are you asking
for? And, you know, what are you asking for this? And he's like, no. He says, I just know this guy, and I think you two would be special together. Well, so, you know, they're going on, and he's kind of trying to feel her out a little bit. And so he wants her to see a picture of me. So, you know, say, well, you know, he's not a troll. He's not, you know, he's not like Mark. He's not in the cave eating Cheetos and, you know, whatever. And, you know, and so he had a picture. He and Jamie Moyer and I were friends. And Jamie Moyer was pitching Major League Baseball at the time. At that time, he was married to Diggerfeld's daughter, and they lived in the South Bend area during the offseason. So the three of us did some things together, and we happened to have a picture, or Doug happened to have a picture of them. So he shows the picture. Well, Benjamin's like, oh, Mom, he knows Jamie Moyer. He knows. Yeah. And so you got to go out with him. So I agreed to call, and then we agreed to meet. And guys, I know this. I mean, it sounds like a rom-com. It sounds like I should be Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan be walking in somewhere. Or I know this, but I'm telling you. I mean, I'm absolutely telling you. It was in the old townhouse restaurant, and they used to have those double doors where you could come in this way. Mm. And we had told each other, I'll be wearing a blue jacket. She was wearing a red jacket. And, you know, so I opened the doors. We opened the doors simultaneously from opposite ends. And I'm like, hey, red. And she's, hi, blue. Guys, you could have knocked me over.
Mm.
I was smitten.
Mm-hmm.
I was smitten. But it was funny then, because the first words out of her mouth was, well, I don't want a relationship. And my first reaction was, who asked?
Yeah.
Even though I was thinking, you know, that there's something special. Mm-hmm. There's something right. So we started talking, and we, you know, went out a couple of times and whatever. And so then there was this phone call, and we're talking, and she says, well, you know, I've been thinking, and so I'm trying to coax it out. She says, well, I just wonder what it would be like for us to be together.
Nope.
You know, and I'm on the other phone going, yeah, mm-hmm. But then what do I do? Because
mm-hmm.
I can't say, well, I've been thinking that right from the start, because it sounds like the line of all lines, you know, I'd be the John Lovitz, you know, but you know, in a short matter of time, we ended up getting married. And where Pat helped change my life is she accepted me for me, loved me unconditionally, and did things to help me grow. That sound like anybody else, you know? You know? Some guy named Jesus?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she did it in such a way that was just such a lift.
Mm-hmm.
And the pressure was off. I mean, the pressure, I didn't have to prove anything. And we just started. And then I saw just the pureness of her heart, and to be able to follow that. And then so then there was a challenge for my faith life, because I had plenty up here and didn't have enough down here.
Mm.
And then when she went through the illness, Guillain-Barré, that's when it went, you know, and dropped from my head to my heart. And I've said this, and it hasn't changed. My goal in my pursuit of God is to be close enough on that road to Pat that I can at least see her taillights. She is an amazing mother. She is, meemaw is the term we use down south. Mm. She is a fabulous meemaw. She's also, and sometimes this is a little bit of frustration, but it's also, woohoo, she is a waif magnet.
Mm.
If there's anybody anywhere, anytime that desperately needs help, they will find Pat.
Yeah. Mm.
Sometimes to my frustration, but they will find Pat.
Yeah.
And she has a heart as big as a beach ball that she'll reach out for him. Yeah. And that has changed my life. Yeah. God used Pat to get a hold of me.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Pat's Pat was an educator.
Right. Right.
And then has been word has it on the street. I think everybody, at least in this community, knows an A1 very dedicated volunteer.
Yes.
In recent years. Continue to invest in children, continuing to mentor and care. And I think especially through our local Boys and Girls Club. And so it seems that the two of you have this element of service has really been the mark of your life here in recent years in particular. Do you guys, and because I don't know, do you find ways to serve together, or are you, do you kind
we
of,
do. Yeah, but we also, we are very different. It's just, you know, God had a sense of humor. Hey, We're going to put him and her together. Yeah. Come here, angels. Let's watch this. I mean, seriously, we are about as different in some ways as you could possibly imagine. I love it big. The bigger, the better. Pat likes it small. Mm-hmm. I like it loud, as you can probably tell. She likes it quiet. I like my meat medium rare or rare. She likes hers medium well. You know, all the way down this list. But where we're together for a love of God.
Mm-hmm.
We're together for a love of our children and our grandchildren. We are together for a love of community, and where we have the opportunity, we serve together.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do is sometimes we'll run parallel lines, and I'm serving over here. Like I did a lot on the board and administratively for the Boys and Girls Club. And Kevin Deary used me until, you know, kind of rode me hard and put me away wet. And Pat did the one-on-one thing.
Yep.
And worked with young people and made a difference there. So, yeah, there have been times when we do it together, but there are also times when we do it simultaneously rather than together.
So our mutual friend, Tammy Hicks, president and CEO of Boys and Girls Club, Elkhart County.
Tammy never tells the truth.
Yeah. So, well, she, this is her story. She's sticking to it.
Okay.
And Tammy reached out to me and I'm so grateful that she shared this. She said, Vince has been a cornerstone of the Boys and Girls Club of Elkhart County for more than 20 years. Mm-hmm. His impact is woven into nearly every part of our organization, from the stage to the clubs to the state house. Vince has graciously emceed our events for two decades, being heart, humor. And I've seen that. I think of Bids for Kids, for instance, mm-hmm. events. Whenever I just enjoy watching that whole, you get up there and do your thing, man. Yeah. Bringing heart, humor, and purpose to every room that he steps into. He has shown up year after year at our golf outings, supported our teams, and poured his time and energy into mentoring the kids who need it most. Vince has been a dedicated coach for our the youth of the year teens. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. Helping them find their voice, tell their stories, and step confidently into leadership. Beyond that, he has been a powerful advocate for our mission at the legislative front, which, interestingly enough, ensuring that our needs, the needs of young people in our community, are heard about and understood. And then, of course, Tammy says we are equally grateful for his beautiful bride, Pat, whose presence at the Goshen Club has been nothing short of an amazing blessing. She's volunteered countless hours tutoring, mentoring, and investing in our kids, and her kindness has touched families and staff alike. Together, Vince and his wife embody what it means to champion youth, which I am deeply, deeply passionate about as well. Their commitment, compassion, and unwavering support has helped shape the lives of hundreds of young people and strengthen the very foundation of our clubs. We are deeply grateful for everything they have given to the Boys and Girls Clubs of Elkhart County.
Very kind words.
So just very, what a, very kind words. I literally, you know, sometimes I reach out to my, my nonprofit executive friends and I'll be like, hey, can I get this from you? And it'll be like a few days, cause they're busy people or whatever. No one, it's like they stopped what they did. And they were like, I needed to say this about Vince. They wasted zero time. So I know that it was, this was a real blessing for them, for both Tammy and Sean to be able to reply to. Just, I think, again, you know, when you talk about Pat, this is a one flesh, to become one sort of initiative here. And I love seeing the impact that you have made. And I think, you know, Vince, when we talk about legacy, because I mean, those are words now that you get to, I guess we get to use that. I, you know, I always talk about,
he just called me old.
Legacy.
Because like in development world, when you're talking about legacy gifts, it's always like we are talking about people that are of a certain age or a certain place in their life. Like, what do you want to leave behind? And it's like, well, they're not dead yet. But when you think about the word legacy and what you're hoping marks your experience and interaction with this community, what is that? What do you desire?
My all-time favorite quote outside of scripture was the words that Edward Kennedy used at Robert Kennedy's eulogy that he said were words that, and I think he attributed to Senator Kennedy, you know, as something he lived by. And that was, some men see things as they are and ask why. I dream things that never were and ask why not. Mm-hmm. If I leave any kind of a legacy, that's the legacy I hope I've left. Mm-hmm. That I looked at the world, looked at our community, or even looked at one-on-one relationships and just said, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why not make this happen?
I love it. Beautiful.
So you and Pat are moving.
Mm-hmm.
Pat's already moved.
Yep.
What's next for Vince and Pat?
For me, it's to breathe a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've spent 40 years building the brand and in the spotlight and those kind of things. And you never say never, you know, it's, you know, God's gotten a hold of me and shook me before. But one thing I'm hoping right now, the number one thing I hope, you know, I told you my grandson's going to be playing football at Fairhope, already is playing football, but I'll get to see his last two seasons. I want to be the old guy in a ball cap sitting on the metal bleachers, watching practice and not saying a word. And I know there are people who, what, Vince? No, I can't say a word, but I want to be that guy who just silently watches and soaks it in and cheers on my grandson. Yeah. And then, but I'm also open to whatever happens when we get down there, we'll be ready. And the other golden part is because we're a blended family, because we both had already kind of established our career paths and everything, you know, Pat and I hit the decks running and have just been running ever since. Mm-hmm. This is a time where we can press the reset button together and learn to do things together all over again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you asked a very poignant question about how many things do you do together? Yeah. And you know, I confess that a lot of what we did was parallel or simultaneously. Yeah. This is an opportunity now to find things that we'll actually do together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And be able to do those things.
Yeah. Love it.
We're excited. We're excited to see the new Turner chapter.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. That's awesome. Well, Vince, first of all, immensely honored that you would just share your story and share your experience. I am like beyond grateful that you're here. We, however, can never release any of our guests from the show before the final.
Now it's time for Dudes and Dads Pop Quiz.
Thank you. Pop quiz. Here we go.
It's okay. Time for the pop quiz.
As you all know.
Which, yeah, if you've never joined us before, it's the time we get to pepper Vince with just questions that have nothing to do
with anything.
Yeah. With anything. Just to get to know him better.
Sure, so, yeah.
Joel, do you want to go first?
You know, I do. And which is interesting with Vince is that some of these pop quiz questions that I was thinking about asking there, I realized that they were like super deep and intentional.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, we'll see how deep and intentional our conversation is. And then maybe I need to put it up. Okay. This is actually, so this is like this is midway, somewhere in the middle. Sure. Vince, talk to me about a book or a collection of writings that has been most impactful for you.
The Ragamuffin Gospel.
Okay.
By Brennan Manning.
Okay.
That's where Rich Mullins got the Ragamuffin bang.
Yeah.
And, the Ragamuffin Gospel kind of boiled down for me theology in its very simplest terms, that no matter what you've done, no matter how you've done it, you are loved. Mm-hmm. And God has a way of making a difference in your life. The Ragamuffin Gospel.
Beautiful.
Awesome. That's great. So if you had somebody that followed you around all the time and did something for you, like mm-hmm. an assistant, what would you have them do?
I'd probably put them in charge of something. Because it's what I do.
Yeah.
I try to raise people up to be able to move ahead of me rather than walk behind me. But if I had like a personal assistant or whatever, they would lead me to some of the best restaurants in Fairhope and Baldwin County in the Gulf area.
There we go.
That would take me here. Show me where to eat. So,
yes.
So we got to find Bubba Joe or whoever it is down there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on that note, Vince, what's the best thing you've ever eaten?
Ooh. My favorite food is asparagus, which
what?
My favorite food is asparagus. And that gets, you know, I'll do icebreakers for our cohorts or whatever. And one of the things I put is favorite food. And I always go, oh, well, my favorite food is asparagus. And everybody goes, ew, what?
Yeah.
But that's my favorite food. I don't know if I could boil it to one thing. I mean, I love good pasta, but probably my favorite food is Cerulean restaurant in Warsaw.
Yep.
Is probably my favorite place to eat.
Wonderful.
All right. I'm going to go the opposite of that.
Sure.
What's the thing that no one else should eat ever again? What don't you like?
Don't even shake my hand if you like liver and onions.
Ooh.
All right. We're good then.
Is there anybody? So once Mark gets set up with his system and we get him set up, I need to find out if people are still eating liver and onions.
Oh, they do.
And is this, if it's an actual thing still? Because I'll check. Let me check that right now. Because I have never encountered it. I have never been offered it, but maybe I have just been fortunate to avoid it so far. And according to Vince, that is the case. Okay. Vince, let's say, we'll just do the classic. You're stranded on a deserted island and you get to have three things with you. What are you going to have?
Going to have my bride.
Yes.
Or is that the definition of stranded that I can't have anybody else? I don't know. But I'd want my bride. I'd want my Bible.
Yeah.
And I'd like at least one Beatles album.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Wow. The Beatles will get him through. All right. That's beautiful.
I mean, I don't know. Sure.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's got me laughing. I can't think of another question. We'll go with what's one thing that most people don't know about you?
I think more people are picking up on it, but I also, as noisy as I am and as loquacious as I am, and I do value private time. Mm. And my favorite thing to do is walk. I walk all over Goshen, and I enjoy that time, that hour and a half or whatever, that I'm just either have music in my ears or a book on tape in ears, and I enjoy the private time. Awesome. I think people sometimes are surprised by that.
Mm.
Vince, if there's one new hobby you could pick up, what would it be?
Ooh, a new hobby. Mm, I'd love to learn to play the piano.
Oh,
okay.
Nice.
I failed miserably with Sheldon Bixler and the choir, and I love music. I mean, I have music around me all the time. I think I'd like to learn to play the piano.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, you have successfully passed the Dudes and Dads podcast.
Congratulations.
Even with asparagus, huh?
I like asparagus.
Or are you grading on the curve?
What we'll see is...
I like asparagus.
When we go to the YouTube, we'll see if our viewership just tanks as soon as he shared that. It's hard to say.
I like it. The thing I don't like about asparagus is the next day when you're...
When your
peeing smells weird. Like...
So full disclosure,
this really is a Dudes and Dads podcast.
I think this is family safe. Yeah. I have had the experience where I have forgotten that I have eaten asparagus. Yeah.
Mark.
Yeah. There's a cord where I've forgotten that I have eaten asparagus. And then I'm shocked and surprised. You're like, oh no, what's wrong? And they're like, oh right. Yeah, that's right. I forgot what I had for dinner. Yeah.
Very all right. Yeah. Well,
this is just proof that, you know, this is why I know that God had a sense of humor, why Christ had a sense of humor, because he had a dozen dudes and dads running around.
There you go.
So there had to have been belching and farting going on the whole time. And you just proved it.
There
so,
we go. Yeah. Well, again, Vince, we're so grateful for you, for Pat, for the impact that you've made in our community here and beyond. Mm-hmm. We wish you all of the best, all the joy, all the happiness for this next chapter in life. We're really excited for you. And we also hope that Vince will be able to share the Dudes and Dads down in Alabama.
We will. We'll tune in.
Spread it around. And that's what we do. We bring people in. And then as like disciples, we shove them out. We bless them to go to the four corners of the world. So thanks so much, Vince. Grateful for you. Hey, everybody. As always, you can head over to dudesanddads.com for show notes, previous episodes, all the goodies. We'll put some things up there, but with Vince. We'll make him as appropriately available on his social media as possible if he decides to engage that in his next stage. But also, you can head over. You can also shoot us an email at dudesanddadspodcast@gmail.com. If you've got any sort of ideas for future shows or harsh criticisms you want to pass our way.
And Joel, I'm going to push it out there again. The voicemail. Ooh. We need voicemail.
Send us a voicemail.
Yes. Voicemail can be found at 574. What's the number? Not even working now. I don't remember the number.
So as Andy pulls the number up, just remember you can leave us a message.
Yeah, somewhere.
And then you can...
Mark, you got work to do.
Yeah, Mark, what's
the... You got work to do.
These two guys can't do it by themselves.
574-501-4467.
Perfect. Leave us a voicemail. Give us some feedback. We'd love to hear that. And as always, guys, we're just grateful that you come and spend some time with us, that you hang out. And so be sure to share.
Until next time.
Yeah, we wish you grace.
And peace.